why keep going? You know, because there's these questions of, well, the production parts of it start getting solved and you start getting a rhythm and a systems down on your farm, and then you kind of go, why am I working so hard again? You know, I figured out the pieces of how, but the why for me became more about creating meaningful work for people in agriculture, and just people having positive experiences with working on a farm and having really high quality products to get from a farm and making that part of our culture.
Welcome to the 399th installment of Ear to the Ground, the Land Stewardship Project's podcast on family farming, regenerative agriculture, community food systems, and local democracy. I'm Brian DeVore, editor of the Land Stewardship Letter. On a farm, sweat equity is just a fancy word for grit, hard work, and endless hours in the field, gutting it out through oftentimes extreme weather conditions. But there comes a time in every farmer's career where it becomes clear that there's only so much of that salty, liquid asset available in the bank account. Their bodies start to age. Maybe children arrive on the scene. Or other life changes require one to reassess how to strike a balance of having a successful agricultural career and some semblance of a good quality of life. For Josh Bryson and Rayma Hoffbauer, that moment of truth came roughly half a dozen years into their farming career. Josh and Rayma started Turnip Rock Farm in 2008, near the western Wisconsin community of New Auburn. The operation focused on vegetables initially. At one point, they had 8 to 10 acres under cultivation, and for 14 years, marketed their production through a community-supported agriculture enterprise. Partly because that farm was so rocky, in 2013, they moved the entire operation 40 miles to Clear Lake, Wisconsin. At that new 80-acre farm, they set about converting several acres of corn ground to cattle grazing pasture. Rayma learned how to make cheese from the milk produced by a small dairy herd, and in 2015, Cosmic Wheel Creamery was launched. Over the past 11 years, Cosmic Wheel has become well known for its production of high-quality, fresh, and aged cheese. Josh and Rayma are in their mid-40s and now have 2 teenage children. So, to say the least, the past 2 decades have been a busy, often exhausting time for the couple. They ask themselves, after all this hard work, how can we make this farm sustainable in the long term without running ourselves into the ground? Around a decade ago, they enrolled in JourneyPerson, a course LSP has offered over the years. The year-long course was designed to support people who have several years of managing a farm under their belt and were working to take their operation to the next level. It provided advanced farm business planning as well as guidance on balancing farm, family, and personal needs. For farmers like Josh and Rayma, JourneyPerson's focus on holistic management can be particularly useful. Holistic management focuses on big-picture decision-making and goal-setting processes. In a holistic management system, a farmer's quality of life is put on the same level as the health of the soil or the operation's economic viability. Holistic management relies on a process of constantly monitoring whether a certain decision on the farm is helping meet long-term overall goals or is just an off-ramp towards something that in the end may undermine a farmer's values and needs. For Rayma and Josh, the JourneyPerson course helped them focus their energies better by downsizing a bit and figuring out what enterprises helped them strike that balance between economic viability and a good quality of life. They now raise around 1.5 acres of vegetables and have an enterprise growing garlic for a seed customer. The farm dropped an egg-laying enterprise they had. The eggs were popular with customers, but chickens were a lot of work. They graze around 10 milk cows, which provide cheese for Cosmic Wheel Creamery, as well as whey for the small pork production enterprise they have. They buy in their hay for winter feed as a way to reduce labor and machinery costs. The Turnip Rock Cosmic Wheel business markets directly via an online store, as well as at farmers markets, food co-ops, and to restaurants. Even though it no longer has a CSA enterprise, the farm works with around 6 area CSA operations to offer its cheese as an add-on to member shares. The farm employs 1 full-time and 1 part-time employee, and Josh says JourneyPerson and other experiences he's had over the years have helped him double down on looking for ways to make working on a farm a positive, fulfilling experience. Taking a holistic approach also requires recognizing the ecological connections on a farm, and Josh and Rayma try to put that into practice as much as possible. They see the fertility and biological activity generated by the livestock as integral to supporting a more regenerative vegetable production system. As they write on their website, everything on their farm has purpose. Every animal, insect, fungi, bacteria, and human is linked in a web of interdependence. Josh recently gave me a tour of the farm and its three high tunnels, as well as the vegetable plots and grazing pastures. I even had a chance to see Rayma in action as she prepared various types of cheese for the farmer's market. What struck me was although Bryson and Hofpower have consciously downsized in some ways, they are still committed to diversity on the farm. They see such variety as key to not only building fertile soil and an overall healthy ecology, but as a kind of economic risk management tool. In the first of a two-part podcast, Josh discusses why it was so important to stop focusing on the how of farming and start asking and answering the why part of the equation. In the next episode, we'll dive into Josh's experience as the Director of Grower Support Programs for the Good Acre, which is Minnesota's largest nonprofit food hub. In that position, Josh's experience as a farmer who has had to seek out his own markets beyond the mainstream commodity infrastructure has provided him some key insights into how to make it as a grower for a local and regionally based food system. But first, let's learn why Josh's first piece of advice to someone who wants to get into on-farm cheesemaking is that they should sell the cows. One of the things you talked about on our tour was you really have come to realize that diversity is it's a little bit of a fine line. Diversity is really important to the operation, but also you realize you can't do everything kind of thing, that you've had to kind of balance that. Can you talk a little bit about how important diversity has been for you guys?
Yeah, I mean, as you know, as a farm that kind of doesn't have a very big guaranteed commodity market and a guaranteed price on everything, we're really trying to balance our risk, right? So we're trying to say grazing and cheese production is one part of balancing risk, because that type of production has a different economy and a different type of ecology even. And so we look at vegetable production the same way. We don't want to put all of our eggs in one basket, in that old adage, but you know, having a seed garlic account paired with, you know, some direct market accounts in our marketing schemes, we kind of realize that that diversity is a great strength, because some years we may not see the same type of behavior, whether it's from the weather or from markets. And so having the options to be able to, you know, pick and choose where we can move is really important when you're small.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that's really important to you folks is that kind of almost whole farm ecology, or kind of creating a closed loop with the nutrient cycle and all that. And I think you described really well when we were on the tour here kind of how that works, for because it's a little bit unusual to see vegetables and a livestock operation, particularly a dairy operation, combined on the same piece of ground. But there's a method to the madness. It's not just because you like raising vegetables and you like making cheese. They kind of work hand in hand a little bit.
We have 80 acres on our farm, and we can graze 65 of it with cattle, and manage that land appropriately and create good ecology there. But we also can use that manure from the cattle to feed the vegetable crops. And then any waste streams that come out of our creamery can go to feed our hogs.
I don't know. I can't remember how long ago it was, but several years ago, you and Rayma felt like you were in a position where you were trying to figure out, you were maybe spinning your wheels a little bit, and ended up taking LSP's Journey Person course. And you said that was really valuable, that came at a good timing, and that's kind of the way that course was set up for farmers who had been doing it for a while and needed maybe to check in about, okay, how do we kind of make this more sustainable? We've been kind of relying on just brute force, sweat equity, and being young, and you're 45 now, and I don't know how old you were when you took Journey Person, but you were at that point where you're like, oh, we got to maybe figure out how to make this more sustainable in the long term.
You know, I think every farm has these milestones in their life cycle. So, you know, you start out, like you said, with brute force and a lot of grit and determination to make it work. And maybe a kid comes along, or some life event comes along, or you have a partner that doesn't want to keep doing it, and you kind of have to reevaluate how you keep going. But we were at about that 5 or 6 year mark, and you know, on our second kid, and we kind of decided, you know, if we're going to keep doing this, we got to kind of figure out some more things that are beyond just production questions or math questions of like how to make the economy work, but how do we make our relationships work? How do we make this work-life balance happen? And I think the Journey Person course gave us that opportunity to just kind of do that reflection of that, how to set those priorities, how to make that happen in your life. And it was really valuable to be in a cohort of other people that were kind of going through the same thing and asking the same questions, coming up with different answers to those questions, but ultimately saying like, yeah, you know, this is something that's important. It's not just, hey, you're not working hard enough and figure it out, but it's saying you think about it holistically, put the events on the calendar that are a priority to you in your life and work towards those events on the calendar and not just the next task on your to-do list. Set the marker, not getting through your to-do list, but more about, did I get what I wanted to do done in my life?
Yeah, you said it kind of helped you guys answer a lot of the why question. Why are we farming a little bit? Yeah. That was an important piece.
Yeah, that why question was really huge, and that really helped me kind of reframe why keep going, you know, because there's these questions of, well, the productions parts of it start getting solved and you start getting a rhythm and a systems down on your farm, and then you kind of go, why am I working so hard again? You know, I figured out the pieces of how, but the why for me became more about creating meaningful work for people in agriculture and just people having positive experiences with working on a farm and having really high quality products to get from a farm and making that part of our culture, you know, and just and seeing raising our kids here and letting them know that this is part of their life and the tradition that comes along with that and the seasonality of that work. I mean, it's just so hard to find that in this world anymore that it's something that we knew we had to hang on to. But I think it wasn't until we looked at that why when we started to kind of center ourselves on what was really important. You know, maybe it's not how do I grow eggplant better? How do I grow kohlrabi better? But it's like, okay, well, how do I make my work-life balance work here for me? How do I get the farm to work for me and not just let the farm take everything I've got?
It's interesting because I think a lot of farmers who may be in the more conventional mode of farming unfortunately see themselves as, I'm a corn farmer, and don't see themselves as a farmer. Like, I have this resource base, which is land, and I know how to raise things. What can I do with that resource base? They get too fixated on whatever the commodity is. I don't want to pick on corn specifically, but it's like, oh, I have to raise this crop because that's what I am. I'm a corn farmer and can't get out of that mode of maybe looking at it more holistically. And one of the things you mentioned I thought was really interesting, talking about the dairy, was doing the kind of the cheese making on the farm and the small scale thing. You said if you had started out with a 50 cow dairy, it had been handed to you or whatever, you may not have ended up where you're at. I thought that was an interesting, because you've had other people approach you about and who have maybe a couple dozen cows or more, and they're like, okay, how do we get into this? And you have some advice for them. I think that's kind of good, actually.
Well, I want to say, you know, this conversation has come up a number of times over the years, but you know, my first advice to a farm in that situation is sell your cows and figure out what can your market handle, right? So work from the market side up to what your production side. You may be at a high production level, but when you get in direct marketing and you get into this type of agriculture, you really have to wear that marketing hat a little more firmly and try to make sure that you know what your goals are there and just recalibrate your production to that. And I honestly don't think that that's necessarily going to be a detriment to anybody. Like, scale is not so much your gross income, but what's your net income too, right? And that's the number we really need to be looking at is, yeah, I might be milking 10 cows, but if I can make more dollars off that and I can use less inputs and have a seasonal system. We only milk once a day. We buy hay for the year, but that's the only feed input we have. We're not buying grain. So our cost of production, although it's small and our volume is low, we can still control the cost of that production a lot easier than if you're much larger. So yeah, that's my advice, is sell the cows and then think about how you're going to market it.
Yeah. Well, I think that goes for any enterprise, because too many times you're saying, this is what I'm raising, this is how much I'm raising. Okay, now I got to find, you're kind of going at it backwards. Instead, okay, is there a market for this? How much, how many cows or how many acres or whatever is it going to take to fit that market? And it's just the way it is. The system is nobody's fault, really. It's just the system is set up. So you're kind of entering it backwards. So I think that's a really important piece.
And you're often being told that that's how you should be thinking about farming, too. I mean, if there's a lot of literature out there that say just grow your maximum amount of what your stocking density will hold, or what whatever the limitation your farm might be, grow to that limitation. But I mean, ultimately, diversity comes as a strength there, because that limitation could change from year to year. You just don't know. I mean, especially climate problems, but also just market fluctuations. You got to kind of be prepared for all of it.
Do you recall, after taking Germ in Person, some things that you changed, either dramatically or maybe just subtly, on the farm?
Yeah, over time, I mean, we felt a little more confident in, our production and scaling our production, removing some elements to our production. Like, we got rid of our laying hens that we had. We started kind of pulling in some of the vegetables, in the sense of, like, we didn't grow as much as certain items that we knew didn't yield well or were not really super popular. So we just started reining in our production, got a little tighter on how we were planting. We set up some watering systems that kind of allowed us to kind of do better on a smaller amount of land. But I think one of the bigger changes we made was starting to look at our labor and our hiring and how we're working with other people on the farm a lot more intently. And I think one of the things that stuck out for me in my reading in that period of time was this concept of servant leadership, where as an employer and as a person that's managing other people, we have to always kind of look back to ourselves as leaders as to what are the systems that I've set up for this person to succeed or fail. And sometimes, I've seen multiple times on farms where people get frustrated with hired help and they don't really understand why things are going the way they are. And it's hard to kind of take that internal reflection and say, what have I done to make this right? What could I do better? And look back, and I think that was really important for me, is to kind of take that inward reflection of what systems we have on the farm, what our expectations are of people that work here, and how do we make sure that they understand all those pieces, and how do I be a better farmer and a better leader on a farm and not just a better production expert.
Yeah. That's really well put. And one of the things you were talking about specifically was in the area of improving your quality of life, you decided to go more for seasonal milking, because you realize for the cheese making, you don't really, you're hitting the farmers markets, that kind of thing. So it can be, the market can be seasonal for you, but it just sounds like it was a way to improve your quality of life. You and Rayma wanted to look at visiting family more, that kind of thing.
Yeah. It was a pretty clear opportunity for us when we started looking at our quality of life to say, what would it look like if we went down to once a day milking? We have all this other vegetable production that we're responsible for and as part of our markets. And what we learned quickly was that, if our cows are adapted to it and they're willing to do that without much problem, we have 20% less milk, but we have 50% less labor. Mm-hmm. When you think about the time that you could be spending doing other things, even the math worked out. Not only was it a quality of life question where it's like, oh, I can actually leave at the end of the day and go to, a kid's recital or, a basketball game or whatever I want to do and not have to worry about being at home to milk the cows. I can also know that I'm doing it and making a good economic choice here too. Yeah, it was some of these things where you say, I could spend my time doing other stuff, whether it's for myself or even doing other jobs around the farm that actually could be earning me a little more money.
And when did you take, do you remember when you took Journey Person, roughly?
I think I took Journey Person, it must have been 10 years ago. I think it was kind of our second year on this farm. It must have been 2014 or so, 2015, about the time when Sadie was first born.
And that makes sense, because you were around 35 or so, or your mid-30s, that's the point where your body starts to say, hey, how long are we going to do this?
you sure you want to keep going like that? Yeah. Yeah, that was definitely, and not only that, I mean, again, these are milestones that happen in your life, right? Whether it's a child or a death in the family or some other thing comes along, yeah, you kind of, you get past your mid-20s into your 30s and you go, okay, what's the next 10 years look like? And I think that was kind of a really pivotal point for me.
You said something, or I read it on your website, and I really like this, that when you moved Turnip Rock Farm, you took the name, but you left the rocks behind. There's a reason rock was in the name. But anyway, when you came here, though, it wasn't like perfectly set up for you. It might have been a better location for other things, but it had been a dairy years ago, and then it sounds like it was being rented out for crops, and you had to do some transitioning, not just into for the vegetable plots, but also for the grazing system, the managed rotational grazing system that you've got going here. Can you talk a little bit about that, how that transition went, and some of the kind of challenges that came with that a little bit?
Yeah, we had one field that was just a cornfield that we needed to seed back down into grass. And that summer, actually that spring, we kind of worked up that field and we were getting equipment moved. I mean, we were moving an entire farm from 40 miles away to here, and we were in that process, but we knew that we had to get seed in the ground. And it wasn't really until about early July we planted that north field in grass, and mostly grass mix or pasture mix with some nurse crop oats. We planted that probably right around 4th of July, and we did not see a drop of rain for probably 8 weeks that year. And I think that was a severely droughted year for a lot of the state. So we kind of, we thought we maybe wasted our time, wasted our money, and didn't really know what was going on. We're trying to get perimeter fencing set up and all these other pieces, deer fencing for the vegetable garden because the deer population was pretty high. We had hay ground that we were busting up to try and plant into that spring, which is, anyone knows, it's busted up sod. It takes more than a month to decay. So, yeah, there was plenty of challenges and lots of learning along the way. We tried working with the EQIP program to get some fencing, and that program was just not really set up for beginning farmers in the sense that they wanted professional installers to do the work, and some of the cost share made it kind of ineffective just because it was cheaper and easier for me to do it myself actually at the end of the day, and would happen faster than to work through them. So yeah, there was a lot of pieces that we kind of had to pull together last minute to make it all come together. But, you know, maybe it's the moment of, like, trying to get everything done too fast. I think my older self looks back at those times and said, I probably was pushing the gas a little too hard and could have had different expectations, yeah.
You were saying that once you got that managed rotational grazing system set up, it kind of delivered as advertised a little bit, that it seems like it did, getting that nutrient cycle going and getting the biology activated in the soil, it really is kind of working out.
Yeah, I mean, we planted that field, and sure enough, by year three, that grass came up, and it's been the same pasture since we planted it, and we have not put a drop of fertilizer or new seeds in the ground since then. And it just keeps getting better every year. You know, yeah, I would say our stocking rates are pretty low, but I think a lot of that is not so much the rates, but it's how we're managing. We're doing a lot of tall grass grazing. We're doing long rotations. I mean, we'll have long, you know, maybe 50, 60-day rotations in some fields. And I just think that giving that land that time to recover, especially in dry years, is just really incredible. And we're trying to use our biology here to our advantage. I mean, we have tree cover, we have some low ground. So in the summer months, we kind of run the cattle through the wooded areas in the same way. We just do it lightly. You know, we don't let them chew on the trees, but we put them in for a day or two, move them and to another shady spot. And, you know, it's just a really great way to use the habitat we have and to maintain that sort of wooded edge that we live on right here.
The Land Stewardship Project is currently not offering the Journey Person course. But if you're interested in other ways to learn more about holistic planning, check out our Farm Beginnings course webpage. Links to that information, as well as to the website for Turnip Rock Farm and Cosmic Wheel Creamery, are on the podcast page for Ear to the Ground episode 399 at landstewardshipproject.org. As I mentioned previously, episode 400 of Ear to the Ground will feature a discussion with Josh Bryson about how his position of Director of Grower Support Programs for the Good Acre Food Hub has provided him insights into how to successfully access local and regional markets. If you have comments or suggestions about this podcast, contact Brian DeVore at bdevore@landstewardshipproject.org, or you can call 612-816-9342. By the way, it helps us greatly if you can give Ear to the Ground a rating on whatever podcast platform you utilize. And word of mouth is the best way to spread the news about our podcast. If you like what you hear, tell at least one person about LSP's Ear to the Ground. Thanks to Laura Borgendale, a Western Minnesota musician, for Ear to the Ground's theme music. And a special thank you to all of Land Stewardship Project's members who make initiatives such as this podcast possible. If you're not a member, visit landstewardshipproject.org to learn how you can support LSP. Thanks for listening.